You're listening to the Wells Tech Podcast, where we talk about technology that can serve the church and its work of spreading the gospel. Wells Tech is a part of the podcast network on Streams, the internet media site sponsored by the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Join the conversation by visiting our podcast website at wellstech.wells.net. Welcome to episode 28 of the Wells Tech Podcast for Wednesday, July 16th, 2008. I'm Martin Spriggs.
And I'm Sally Draper.
And we're your hosts for our weekly conversation about technology and ministry. Morning, Sally. What's up in the Draper household?
Well, we're enjoying summertime. I've got three young men here to keep busy this summer, and we found a couple of techie ways to enjoy summertime.
Is that right?
This week we got in the Wii Fit craze. We managed to get our hands on a set of Wii Fit tools, which are very, very hard to come by. They're not very many in the stores, but yeah. I happened to be in the Walmart at the right time and grabbed a Wii Fit package, and we've all been doing the balance board thing and really having a lot of fun with it. It's very, very cool technology. They've got sensors and a balance board that'll judge your body balance and that kind of thing, and you can do all kinds of exercises and cool, fun games with it. So just a lot of fun and exercise as well, you know. So who would have thought that video games would come to making you sweat and work out and things like that? So
yeah, I was up at my brother-in-law on over the 4th of July weekend, and my nephew had a Wii Fit, and I'd not seen one before, really understood what it was. So, but basically it's a, what is it, probably a foot and a half wide by a foot deep, just a little platform that you stand on, and you give the Nintendo software all your specs, your height, weight, and all that stuff, and it from what I saw, it allows you to kind of track your progress over time, so it'll measure your balance and put you through these workouts, and then ultimately gauge how well you're doing over time, and kind of your own little exercise tutor, right?
Right, like a personal trainer. And it actually weighs you. Part of the balance board has a scale mechanism as well. So just amazing technology. I'm so impressed and having a lot of fun with it, and so are the boys. So they're determined to get fit, like they really need, you know, to work on that. But they're working hard at it.
Now, I've heard a lot of adults are using that, you know, these days, and you know, feeling better about, you know, exercising as a result, because it's kind of fun, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, you can do snowboarding and hula hoops and all kinds of stuff. It's really crazy.
It's really fun to watch somebody else do it. My son got on it when we were up with my brother-in-law, and he was doing the soccer thing. And it's amazing how the technology works, where essentially you're trying to, I think, head balls that come to you. So he's, you know, jumping all over the place with his head going to the left, to the right. You know, it's almost comedy to watch, but I can see where it's really good exercise.
Yeah, my husband threatened to bring a video camera down.
That's right.
No, off limits.
Okay. Well, that's just a little freebie for our listeners. Wii Fit. How much does it cost? How much does it run?
I think it's right around $90, $89.95
or bad.
Something like that. Yeah, the challenge is finding a copy of it. I've been looking for a while and was excited to get a copy.
And I suppose there'll be more and more stuff coming out once they figure out how best to use the technology.
Oh, I'm sure.
Well, let's get to the show topic today, Sally. I'm kind of excited to wrap up our conversation from last week. We had, for those of you that listened, we had begun a conversation about a personal productivity method called Getting Things Done, or GTD for short. Today, we're going to take that to the next step. You know, last week, we talked about some of the methodology and some of the philosophical approaches to organizing your information and making sure that you're collecting all of your stuff in a trusted system that would allow you to move forward through your day knowing that you've captured it all and that you're, at least in some organized fashion, going to be able to attack it all in some kind of priority. Today, we're going to talk a little bit more about the GTD method in the context of what tools are available. And there's some very cool tools that are available to help you if you're using, if you spend your time, or at least a portion of your time in front of a computer. There's all kinds of things that have been built over the last few years that help you and kind of discipline you into this GTD method.
Sure, Martin. I think one of the key points that we brought out last week is that you need to have a trusted system to
right.
keep up with your things to do. Mm-hmm. And that's the hard thing for me, finding one system that I'm going to sink all my time and energy into maintaining these to-do lists there. And I want it to be just a really great system, one that's going to be real intuitive and easy to use, and one that's going to feed me back the information that I want in a really useful way, you mm-hmm. know. So lots of expectations for this trusted system that I'm going to adopt to carry out this GTD methodology.
Yeah, so if you didn't listen to last week, I'd suggest going back and taking a listen to that, where we talk about some of the methodologies and approaches, because it's all based on a book written by David Allen called Getting Things Done, The Art of Stress-Free Productivity. It's a quick read. It really is well done and well written, and probably worth a couple hours that it would take you to go through this. I've reread it a couple times, and it's been really helpful each time. Just to reinforce what we said last week, it's important to have a regular collection process or collection period where you grab everything that all the responsibilities that you have and all the things that you have to do and all the things that you have to think about over the course of a day or week or a year, whatever, and put them into, as Sally said, this trusted system. And it's trusted because once you've got it in there, you can get it out at the appropriate time. Now, we're going to talk about some digital tools here in just a second, but there are all kinds of tips and tricks in this book about some non-digital ways to collect that information, from file folders to all kinds of approaches to collecting business cards and meeting notes and those little pink phone slips that you have, all those kinds of things. But what we're going to talk about today is putting all those in a system, plus going through the mental gathering process, kind of doing a mind sweep and kind of emptying your mind of everything that's sitting in there that's maybe not even written down, and getting it into some of these tools. So, Sally, what kind of tools have you tried or are using to implement the GTD method in your workflow?
Well, if you go out to Google or your favorite search engine and Google GTD, you're going to come up with probably
stuff, right?
hundreds, yeah. literally, of different applications that people have developed around this concept to help you carry it out. And I've tried a few of them. Currently, I'm using basically a task list in my email client, which mm-hmm. is the Thunderbird Lightning combination that I've talked about in the past on the show.
Mm-hmm.
And with that task list, I can keep up with all my things to do and regularly review it and assign it to categories and things like that. And that's basically what you need to be looking for, something to keep up with your to-do list. And then it's important to have categorization or tagging capabilities. And so a couple of other products I've tried in the past. One's called Thinking Rock. It's a free download from the internet. It's a multi-platform tool, and it's totally geared toward the GTD methodology. It even has kind of a flowchart built into the software interface that walks you through the different processes of analyzing your task and assigning them to categories and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Another one that I've looked at and used for a period of time is Monkey GTD. It's a wiki tool. It's built off a wiki tool called TiddlyWiki, and it basically allows you to put your to-do list and assign them to different categories. Very simple to use. It runs locally on your computer. There's no ties to the internet. You don't have to be online to use it. You could actually copy it to a thumb drive and carry it with you wherever you go and have your GTD system right there in your pocket if you wanted to do it that way. Both of those, certainly have their advantages, but for me, I was looking for something more integrated with my email system as well. So that's why I went with the Thunderbird Lightning option to mm-hmm. keep up with mine. And then just one more that I'll mention is called Remember the Milk.
Oh, yeah.
And I got ticked out, tuned into this one actually because it has a tie to Google Calendar. So if you make your to-do list and they're date-based, you can have it come up on your Google Calendar. You can tie in there as well.
Right.
It is a web-based product, and it'll allow you to send reminders from Remember the Milk. You can get reminders to your email, your telephone, or instant messaging if you set up your task in that way. So just a couple of options for our listeners there.
Yeah, the tool you select will kind of depend on, you know, where you do your work and how you like to work, you know, with the digital tools that you have. So if you're on the road a lot, one thing that you'd probably want is the ability to have that to-do list or that system with you, let's say on a smartphone. If you don't have your laptop with you, or you've got serious time without access to that, or even you have to understand whether you've got access to the internet. So a tool like Remember the Milk may be good for somebody who's got, you know, internet access on a regular basis, but maybe not as good for somebody who's kind of landlocked and doesn't always have access to that. I know with Remember the Milk, and there's a few other tools like it, we talked about Jot a while ago. Jot's that online, or that basically phone service that you can call and send reminders to yourself. I know there's a little app that works with Jot that'll actually send those reminders to your to-do list on Remember the Milk. So if you don't have access to anything but your cell phone, you can call Jot and say, you know, Remember the Milk, or whatever it is, you know, that you want to put on your list. Go ahead, Sally.
I was just going to say, it's a crazy language you speak these days. You Jot, Remember the Milk.
That's right.
Kind of odd sounding, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah. So yeah, what was it about the tool, the two tools, the Thinking Rock and Monkey GTD, that you didn't stick with, and that you finally settled on the Thunderbird and Lightning approach?
Well, I think both of those are very viable tools. And again, they would be really excellent for someone that's offline more than they're online, because
okay,
they're both local tools. But for me, being online for my work and also for a lot of things I do during non-work hours, it made more sense for mine to be tied to my email and that mm-hmm. client, you know, because I kind of live in that client a lot more.
Right. On, you know, my experience has been, I haven't tried that many tools because I've finally found one that I really, really like to work with. And that is basically a build-your-own approach using Outlook. We, in the center office, we use Outlook. And that's kind of the nerve center of all of our email and calendaring and task lists and those types of things. So we're kind of committed to that platform, so I really needed something that worked with it. And David Allen has a product that actually works with Outlook. It's a fee-based product that I tried for a little while, and it worked really well. But I stumbled across a free one that worked equally as well. It takes a little bit of work on the front end to kind of get things set up the way that you want. But I found it on a blog by David Ornstein, and we'll put a link to that in the show notes. But essentially, it walks you through all the things that you need to do to, I think it works on Outlook 2003 or Outlook 2007. So you need to have one of those two versions. But essentially, you need to, you know, there's a little bit of geeky stuff that you have to do. You have to, you know, type in a few SQL queries, but it walks you through it. So anybody who can follow direction can make this happen within their Outlook. Not Outlook Express. This is regular Outlook. So take a look at that, and that's free of charge, and I found that to be, you know, super easy to work with on a day-to-day basis. If you are on a Mac, one that I've heard a lot of good things about, I can't say that I've used it. I do have a Mac at home, but I centralize everything in one system in my work system. But if you have a Mac, IGTD seems to get a lot of good press. We'll put a link to that in the show notes as well, IGTD. And then one other place that I frequent fairly often is a website called 43folders.com. 43 Folders is kind of a takeoff on a portion of the GTD methodology, where it's a paper collection process where you set up 43 folders, 31 folders, one for each day of the month, and then 12 folders, one for each month of the year. And the theory is that you begin to put these pieces of paper or brochures or things that you need to remember or want to consider at a future date into these folders in the appropriate folders so that you can go back each day. You're supposed to, you know, look at your folders each day and see what's in that folder for that particular day. Kind of a low-tech way to store your stuff, getting it off your desk into this, you know, again, trusted system. But 43 Folders talks about all kinds of digital kinds of tools that you can use to implement the GTD methodology. Sally, any other resources you can think of that will help our listeners if they're interested in GTD?
Sure. I stumbled across a few more that I wanted to share. One is a website called lifehacker.com. And again, that's just a blog site where they're sharing ideas around the GTD kind of concept, just tech tips and tricks and free downloads and things like that. So if you're interested in learning more about the concept or different tools that are out there, you might want to check out the Life Hacker blog. Mm-hmm. And then finally, I found a blog called Precision Change, which is actually a podcast site. And they recently interviewed David Allen. The interviews run in their episodes 8, 9, and 10. They have a Getting Things Done 201 with David Allen, so that kind of the next step.
Great.
And then one called David Allen Can Make Time Disappear. And then finally, David Allen asks, what are you here to do? So just maybe some thought-provoking interviews with the man himself. Mm-hmm. If you want to check those out, we'll include links in our show notes as well.
Yeah, I was not aware of those. I'm going to have to listen to those. Neat. Very good. So if you're interested, it's certainly not going to cost you anything to give it a try, maybe a little bit of your time, but I think you have to give it some time. At least that's the way I found to get into the discipline of working through this. But I found it to be, I may not be saving a lot more time, but I think I feel better about my approach to prioritization and making sure that I'm spending time in the appropriate ways. So that's why I like the system. Again, it's not for everybody, as we mentioned before, but I think there are, you know, there are some people that this would be a real good approach.
How about Mind Like Water, Martin? Mind Like Water?
Yeah, not always, but I'm working at it.
Okay.
All right. That's our GTD discussion. So take it for what it's worth. Up next is our interview, our second part of our interview with Professor David Selnel. Last week we played part one, where David talks about the hybrid classroom. He's a professor at Martin Luther College in New Ulm, Minnesota. And let's listen to our subsequent conversation with him about this hybrid classroom and how it's going for him. And when you think about the hybrid classroom concept, do you think you spend more time prepping for the hybrid classroom versus the traditional classroom setting?
The first time, yes. And you see, what I've done is I'll create lessons that issues that I want the students looking at, and looking in history. Well, I'll have them looking at primary source documents and things like that, and then discussing those issues with one another. So the first time, it takes some time to set it up and create that lesson. But I've reused those with successive classes, so, you know, in the long run, it, as far as the setup, it doesn't take any more time than getting ready to get into a classroom setting. Mm-hmm. What's time-consuming is monitoring and keeping up with discussions that go on. Because if you think about it, if you're in a live classroom and you have a discussion, it's you're there, you're listening to it.
Right, it's confined to the time you're in that classroom, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. The online discussion doesn't have as tight of confines, and it can there can be a lot of thought and commentary going on. And if you're the teacher in that environment, you want to be kind of looking in on what everybody's saying. In fact, I mean, for a classroom setting, I actually give them scores. They get graded on their participation and thoughts within the online environment. So I can't just ignore it. I need to be paying attention to it, too. So that takes a fair amount of time for me. Like any teacher, I suppose, instead of taking papers home to correct, I turn on the computer and look at it there.
Right.
So, Professor Selnel, if someone were interested in getting started, either at an elementary or high school level or whatever, are there particular cautions, things that you've learned along the way that you could share with them about this type of hybrid classroom?
Yeah, I think so. My initial ventures were overly ambitious, asked for the students to be doing more than was really humanly possible for the time and the scope of the assignment that I had. And now, granted, I'm thinking higher education, college students, they're supposed to be doing serious work. And so I didn't think it was that much higher than it should have been. but I think at the same point in time, if you're going to scale this down to high school level or elementary levels, really think about what's realistic for the students that I'm teaching. How much can I ask them to be reading in preparation for a discussion? If you're posting things, you want them to, you know, because you don't want them just to have a discussion from the hip, you know, out of thin air. You want to have them learning something and then talking about it. And then, you know, what questions you pose themselves are part of it too. I use this primarily for discussion. I mean, there are other things that can be done too. For maybe one thing that would work very well for elementary schools, I've used the class website as a place to offer practice quizzes and practice tests and things like that, so that the students can go through sample test questions and things before a test comes up and feel a little more confident about the kind of testing that's going to happen or something like that. But when it comes to discussions, I have found that if I ask a question that really is a good question, gets them thinking, has more than one side to it, more than one answer to it, that turns into a very profitable back and forth conversation in the online forum. If the question is too easy or too straightforward, everything kind of falls flat. If the question is too much above them and they don't see where I'm going with it, then they're kind of lost.
Sure.
So, I mean, a lot of it has to do with asking good questions.
So, Dave, where do you think all this is going? You know, maybe at first of all at Martin Luther College, but maybe even in the educational sphere itself. Do you see this growing at a steady pace, slow pace, exponential? You know, where do you see this going?
I haven't read exhaustively in like literature on higher education as to where they think things are. I mean, the things I have read, it's becoming more and more popular. Online education is, you know, just taking purely online courses is
right.
Growing. Hybrid courses are becoming more popular at various campuses, and students doing a combination of things. I mean, you've got, I know over in South Dakota, in Brookings, one of the universities there, they've got students on campus who are taking more online courses than in-classroom courses. You know, because they allow them the choice of either one, and so students kind of want menu choices, consumer sort of thinking. Let me choose the way I want to do this.
Right.
And so I think more and more in higher education, there is somewhat a catering to student learning styles and desires that way. I think one place that I think this is happening too on the high school level is more and more in the public sector. You've got high school students taking college classes for credit already in high school, and some of that is being done by means of online things as well. I think that'll be a challenge for us in our Erie Lutheran high schools to be able to offer something like that if it becomes a strongly desired option by students, because you know in the public sector you've got tax dollars supporting it, and the students do this all very cheaply. We'd have financial issues to overcome, I think, within our own circles. I wonder too if there are possibilities for grade schools or high schools that serve a wide area. When I did the talk at the leadership conference, one of the teachers from Evergreen Lutheran High School out in Washington came up afterwards, was talking about how they've got a group of students, you know, a couple hours away from their area high school who want to have the benefits of the high school, but do it at their own location and do it by means of distance learning. Mm-hmm. And of course, he was thinking maybe we hybridize this a little bit so that they're not doing everything by an online method, but that we do see them face-to-face at least part of the time, too. You know, however that would work out for them. So that was just a conversation on something that's in an idea stage. Don't advertise that as something that's going to happen or has happened, okay? Mm-hmm. But, I mean, those are the kind of things, I think, even for grade schools that are serving a wider area and audience in far-flung districts, can they combine homeschooling with efforts from the school as a central teaching point?
Sure. Well, I think you said earlier, you have to understand your context, you know, and there are probably many, many different kinds of application for this kind of technology and, you know, hybridizing, if that's a word, you know, whatever your, you know, whatever your subject matter is, and depending on distance and technological capabilities, you've got some choices to make.
The other thing I think, you know, and I've been focusing here in the last couple thoughts on when you've got a far-flung group of people you're serving, but I think even if you're very localized and you've got a school where everybody's in town or right around the corner, this may be a way of giving something challenging to the more gifted students in a class, mm-hmm. or for providing some remedial things for students who are struggling in certain areas, that they can be given those types of things in online lessons, while the normal classroom proceeds according to its normal schedule.
Sure.
That's just another possible thought. Mm-hmm.
And one other idea, kind of along the lines of some of the things you've been discussing, is potentially the sharing of coursework. So if one teacher, maybe in one Lutheran high school setting, develops a course or course materials for, say, a Latin course, that could be shared with another Lutheran high school or whatever. I know, I believe at Martin Luther College you're using the Moodle platform, and Moodle allows you to package your courses and upload them to other Moodle installs and that kind of thing. So maybe that would be a vision to add to for the future, potentially the Synod having some of the coursework shared.
Yeah, I think that's a very good idea. That we don't all have to, you know, keep inventing a different version of the wheel if there's something working. We're again thinking of confirmation instruction as mm-hmm. we mentioned a while back, that could be something shared, and 'cause I know a number of congregations are using an approach where parents are doing a good amount of the instruction, even if they're not far-flung distance-wise, just because they want to get parents involved. And so maybe mm-hmm. some things could be created and shared in that way.
Yeah, and we haven't even, you know, broached the subject of homeschooling, because we do have a number of Wells families doing that across the country who aren't in a, you know, nice geographic proximity to a Wells school. So there's certainly application there as well.
Sure.
Dave, thanks so much for taking the time with us. This is, I think this is something that's going to grow and grow, and it sounds like you're getting comfortable with it, and I'm sure others are doing the same as well. So blessings on your continued use of that, and certainly your work there at Martin Luther College.
Thank you very much.
Our pleasure. Sally, it was good for Dave to spend a little bit of time with us talking about, you know, kind of a unique approach that he's taking, at least for Martin Luther College, and it seems like it's working pretty well for him and his students.
Right. It's interesting. We had some follow-up conversation with him after recording the interview, and he had another thought that he wanted to share with our listeners, and that is that with the skyrocketing price of gas and our economy, kind of in a difficult position right now, it may be that more and more schools might look toward this online hybrid type approach for satisfying some of their school days even. Maybe at a Lutheran high school level, the students could stay home one day a week and do their classes online for that day. You know, who knows what the future holds, but certainly the technology is there to support that kind of thing if we invest the time and energy into it.
I think, boy, we're at the tip of the iceberg here. There's so much. I think you're going to see advances in technology even faster than we've seen them over the past 5 to 10 years, especially with the advent of video conferencing and as broadband it becomes more pervasive and more people have it. That's going to open up some doors that we never even knew were there. So exciting stuff.
Very, very true.
Our picks of the week is next. Sally, you have a pick this week?
Sure. I spend a lot of my time doing training. I train a lot of different people, and one thing that I rely heavily on is Microsoft's online training resources. At the Senate offices, we use Microsoft products for our day-to-day office needs, and they have an excellent training site. It's at office.microsoft.com/en-us/training, and I'll put that in the show notes for today's show. But what you're going to find there is a multitude of free and self-paced courses, and also links to a lot of other cool stuff like templates and clip art, and even webcast and podcast about Microsoft products. They feature information on Office 2003 and 2007 products, and those two product lines are quite a bit different. So they're, not turning off their support of Office 2003 and the functionality that's built into it. But just really a treasure chest full of training resources there for the taking. So if you're a Microsoft user, you'd want to check out this Microsoft online training site.
Yeah. Sally, we talk a lot about free stuff and open source stuff, and we don't talk a lot about some of the Microsoft tools, and some of our congregations, I think, and schools shy away from it because there are some costs associated with it. But it's probably worth a look at some of these products because of our charity status and because of our academic status in our schools, you can get really great discounts on Microsoft products, the Office Suite, and all kinds of other stuff. If you're interested in finding out what those prices are, a good place to start looking is our ShopWells program, our Synod procurement program, open to all Wells and ELA less congregations at shopwells.net. Just take a look at some of the prices there that you can get on just standard office products. And, you obviously get support, and obviously many of these are industry standard types of tools as well. So these are great training tools that Sally mentioned for those products. I'm going to talk about it is a technology. It's not a software or hardware kind of thing. It's basically a 411 service called Goog 411. Yeah, you guessed it. It's about a product by Google. If you dial 1-800-GOOG-411, that's 1-800-466-4411. I just have it plugged into my phone. It basically acts as a Yellow Pages directory, similar to you calling 411 from your home to look up the nearest place to buy pizza, or where is the Home Depot, et cetera, you can do this all on Goog 411. Basically, you call the number. It works through voice recognition, so it'll ask you for your city and state. So if I'm in Milwaukee and I'm looking for a Home Depot, it'll say city and state, and I'll say Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and it'll say go ahead, and then I'll say Home Depot. And then it'll give me all of the Home Depots, and it'll list their address and phone numbers, and I just have to tell it which one, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, whatever. And then it essentially gives me three options. I can have it connect me, so I'll just say call, and it'll connect me right there. I can say text me, and it'll text me the location and information about that location, plus the phone number, so I'll always have it on my phone. Or I can say map it, and it'll send me a map or a link to a map on my phone as well. Very cool. And the best part about it, it is absolutely free. You know, when you call 411 from your home, it's typically, what, $1.25, $1.50, $2? I don't know what it is. You know, it's ridiculous. But if you use Google 411 and it's an 800 number, it really costs you absolutely nothing. So there's really no reason to use 411 on your phone, either your cell phone or your landline. Again, it's still in beta. It's been in beta for probably a year at this point, and that's kind of the way Web 2.0 applications work. But kind of a neat service. It doesn't work for residential. It's only for Yellow Page types things. So if you're looking for a pizza, local pizza place or whatever, you've always got, you know, a nice 411 handy for you. So that's Goog 411 is my pick of the week.
I'm going to have to try that out. We don't have 6 Home Depots in Sleepy Eye, Minnesota, but maybe I can get it to give me the Ace Hardware number. Who knows?
That's right. That's right. it's very cool technology, and it works really well. You think, you know, voice recognition, sometimes it won't understand what you say, but I've had very few problems with it. So plugged it right into my phone. I've replaced the 411 feature in my phone with it. So good stuff.
Cool stuff.
Our Wells.net feature of the week, Sally.
Today I wanted to point people to our links page, kind of an odd name for a page on a website, but we do have a page called Links, and it's for all the links that aren't part of the regular Synod budgeted type items. You know, our Wells.net website covers the areas of ministry and support that are headquartered there at the Synod Administration Building, but there's lots of other Wells and ELS groups out there with websites. And so if you're looking for maybe a parasynodical organization for some of our different schools that aren't the Synod schools, but like the area Lutheran high schools and that kind of thing, and even more, things like camps and retreats and campus ministry groups, you're going to find just another treasure chest, that's my word for the day, of links to all of these great organizations on our links page. And you can get to it in the top toolbar. We love to refer to that top toolbar that goes along for the ride on every Wells.net page. There's a link up there that says links, or you can get to it at a jump board link, wells.net/jump/links. So I encourage you to check out all the great links that are part of our links page on Wells.net.
If it's in the Synod, it's probably linked there somewhere. So that's a great resource. Sally, I know you wanted to tell our listeners about a recent conference that was held and some resources that came out of that they might be interested in.
Sure. This is kind of one of those events after the event. If you weren't able to be at the National Educational Computing Conference, it was held at the end of June in San Antonio, sponsored by the International Society for Technology and Education. It was a 3 or 4 day long conference, really big event down in San Antonio, with tons of the big names in education technology, like David Warlick, Alan November, and Bernie Dodge. They were all there and part of the speaker list. They've published a complete video archive of the conference online, and we'll include a link to that in our show notes so you can find out about podcasting. Talks were given on global awareness and globally connecting students, using Linux, student creativity, just excellent video resources there from this technology conference that was held in San Antonio. So I encourage you to check that out, and we'll have a link in our show notes.
Great. Thanks, Sally. If you'd like to get in touch with us, either to suggest a topic, give us feedback of any kind, just have a conversation with us, we would love to hear from you. WellsTech.Wells.net is the website. You can go there, leave a comment. You can find all other ways to communicate with us as well. We have an email address. That's WellsTech@Wells.net. If you're so inclined, leave us a voicemail, 414-375-2255. 1-800-332-3334. We have a Facebook page and a very popular Wells Tech listserv, and you can find out how to get connected with that on our website as well. That is the I think that is the place to throw out technology questions to all kinds of people who are in tune with that. And I've rarely seen a topic that goes out there that didn't get 3, 4, 5, 10 responses to it from people that are on that list. So
got some great brains going on out there.
Take advantage of that, absolutely. Well, that's it for this week. Hopefully you received some encouragement or some ideas that would help you in your ministry and help the spread of the gospel and help your work in whatever ministry that is, whether it be teaching or preaching or whatever it is. So we really appreciate you listening, and we would encourage you to come back next week and listen again. We'll close our show with another Wells featured artist. This week is the music of Kevin Lersch. Kevin is going to be singing O Sacred Head, Now Wounded, from his album Abide With Me. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll talk to you next week.
With grief and shame.